tiene gotas.
Hello, and welcome to At Your Instep. My name is Morgan McCarr, and to my right is Jordan.
Hey, guys, what's up?
And to my left is Mike.
I love that you, like, point your arms to us, like...
I know, I understand it's an audio medium, but...
Guys, see, Mike's to my left. But can you tell?
I literally have to do that, or I will fuck it up. That's why it is there. I'm gonna be open with our audience. I'm not that smart all the time. I don't know if they could tell that or not. Anyway...
Everybody just went, oh, Morgan's an idiot, guys. You know,
I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, everyone just held up their hands and was like, left? Right. Oh.
Just making the thing with your thumbs and your fingers, just like, all right. L means left. This is the right. All right.
L doesn't mean left, buddy. Yeah. Your mom told you wrong. Well, this is yours.
L means loser.
Oh, no.
Mama, why?
Mama McCorrell.
I don't know why she's Italian, but whatever. Moving on. So we definitely have some stuff to talk about.
Should we play some bagpipes? Is that what
I mean? I don't know. Listen.
Hey, you're Morgan. Oh, you're Morgan.
Mama Mikara.
I don't know.
I'm trying to think of a ghetto way to say your name. Sorry. Wait, I'm not African-American. I don't know
how. Oh, great. Well, I'm sorry to all of our African-American listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we've done some stuff to talk about. We got... GP Dallas Fort Worth or GP Snowed Out, as I like to call it. We have Star City Games Open Series in Oakland, and we also had a classic here in Columbus that we wanted to talk about. And then we have our question of the week, and then we'll wrap up. And the next week we have episode 25, which is pretty exciting. So it'll be a quarter of century.
We'll have to go like all Hunger Games on it. Quarter Quell.
Yeah.
Well, one of us is going to die. Stay tuned.
So get ready for a new host at your step for episode 26.
I'm probably going to die.
I'm probably gone.
That's what it is. Let's be fair. Come on.
Morgan did get a new cat and it looks hungry.
That's true.
So I hope you guys like Dave Pro Points Nolan. And
we'll go ahead. We'll get started with a GP Dallas Fort Worth. So it was a sub 1,000 GP, which probably that's been a while since.
It's been a while, especially in the mainland US.
Yeah, yeah, mainland
seems
US.
Difficult to do, honestly.
That's true. Unless there's a
giant. You know, like an act of God. You know, like a city that never ices over, just like icing over.
That's true.
Wait, Jordan, tell me that happened.
Yeah.
Resident religious expert is phoning in saying that is correct.
Jordan's like a meteorologist, like the God.
But in all honesty, in Texas, it's like if anything happens, no one knows.
Yeah, they don't have the reserves of ice like we do. Salt like we do. So yeah. It's like, oh, ice in the roads? Well, let's plow and salt it. And Dallas like, ice in the roads? Seek shelter!
the end of days!
When I went to Florida a year ago, it was 55 out. Me and my dad get off the plane tanked up in shorts because we just came from January. And the guy at the airport goes, what are you wearing? I was like, oh, I have a tank top and shorts. It's Florida. Whoa, Florida. And the guy's like, it's 55 out. I'm like, oh, where we came from, it was -2. He goes, are people dying? Like, with the most sincere look on his face. This guy at the airport checkout stand, he's like, wait, -2? As in, like, less than 0.
Does not compute.
Yeah. He's like, people would not be at work today, man, if it was -2 here.
Yeah. It did turn into an interesting narrative because, like, it was kind of actually fun, like, watching Twitter, seeing which pros are going to make it.
Which pros were?
Yeah. Who decided to roll the dice on the 11-hour car ride and who decided to go back to bed?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting if you followed a lot of pros on Twitter to see the you know, travels that they made and people, you know, already feeling like they won just by getting to the GP, taking pictures of the front of the convention center, posting them.
Like, just like on their knees, like, we made it! Mecca!
But, so they were still, you know, William Jensen still shows up, so he apparently just teleports to these things and immediately goes to top 8. I have no idea how that happens, but...
He has 15 buys.
Yeah, just all the time. He's just always here. But he was in the finals.
I think he just forgot how to lose. Like, it just seems like it's like, why are you in the top 8 again? And he's like, is there another option? I'm confused. Is there less than top 8?
Yeah.
Well, That guy's so quiet, too. Like, you could just be standing by him and not know you're standing by William Gibson Hall of Famer.
Well, you would. You'd see the shadow. Really? Yeah. The guy is gigantic.
Who's this giant that's just
And then he makes this, like, awkward Eeyore giggle, and you're like, oh, you're just, like, this normal nerd. Like, you're just like us. And then he, like, walks away shy.
Yeah, like, except he's, like, in the Hall of Fame and stuff like that. And
you're just like me, except for 4,000% better.
He just insulted William Gibson Hall of Famer.
So he did play Azorius Control. He was the second place. Of course, the first place winner was Marlon Gutierrez, playing an Orzhov Controlist that actually showed up last week. Although there were some people having the typical list argument of this is the, you know, people saying that he made this list, and then that
I thought Todd Anderson designed this
list. Yeah, clearly. That's who makes all the deck lists these days, right? We already discussed that Jerry Thompson's already at Wizards. He's not doing anything. He's in the Future League. So there is that happened, and it's basically a sort of would you call this a splash for white, or would you call this more just like a color commitment to white in his list? I mean, he is playing for...
He's playing two Last Breath, which is why he's playing four Blood Barons.
Yeah, and he does have...
A singular Sin Collector, but two more on the board. I mean, this is splash-tastic. I mean,
yeah,
he gets his Skryland, and he gets his Godless Shrine. He only has to play one Plains, which is pretty sweet.
Right, so 9 total white sources in his list. But there was even some contention about... we'll definitely get into this a little bit later about, you know, people that, you know, pros that weren't able to come to the GP, kind of talking down to a player in the finals of a GP, saying things almost as if, like, he didn't deserve to be there or even win the whole thing, which I think is ridiculous. But
the people at home.
The people that are not at this GP, not competing, you know, I'm not saying that they wouldn't want to be, but it seems kind of a little...
Well, yeah, well, I mean, we can get into this a little bit now. Yeah. That's what I was talking about, where it's like, I don't know, like... A lot of the pros end up trolling each other. You know what I mean? So if you follow people like I said, Eric Froelich was really the one this weekend who was really mm-hmm. heavy. But even Paul Reitzel was a little bit. The one who I didn't see too much of was Sperling. And normally he's the guy who's
biggest of them all.
But they were saying things like, oh, like, you know, it's painful to watch. They wish it. And it's like, you know, people make mistakes. Especially, you know, I don't know. Like, people who like Froelich and Reitzel and these people who are used to being on camera,
mm-hmm.
right? Consistently. Like, the first time you are in that top 8, I mean, you're playing against, you know, Huey Jensen. Yeah. Like, you know, I think you're allowed a few issues here. Like, I think you're allowed to do this. And honestly, the guy won. So all the random complaints about not being able to watch this and that, whatever, he walked home a couple grand richer. He walked home with an invite to the Pro Tour, and they'll have to possibly play him there. Yeah. So, you know, judge it for yourself when you see it.
Right. Well, for the point of devil's advocacy, you know, I'll play the Morgan here. We would do, and I guess, like, when I read those tweets, I wasn't necessarily thinking, oh, yeah, those guys are bitter, or they're hating on the other people. They're trying to, like, stick up for their friend a little bit. Like, when we watched Dave lose and that went into the top 8 against the guy who cheated him with the Hercules recalls,
yeah.
we said these same things, and we, like, and that's a little different. Now, that's a narrow example. So, like, I watched you play against a guy who just, like, a control opponent who just bashes you out, and your list is tuned to control. Like, yeah, I'll go, like, yeah, dude, he drew, like, a Lux Act, like, whatever. And there's nothing necessarily mean against that guy. It's just saying, hey, Mike, you just got blown out and it happens, you know? So I guess when I read those tweets, I was just more like, you know, like, Huey Jensen is in the circle of top-tier pro. He is one of, if this is an old boys club, he's one of the old boys.
No, that makes a lot of sense from that perspective, but I don't think that's what it was. Like, I don't think the cheating counts. You know, even the guy, the Nolan's whole thing was, like, if it was, you know, quote-unquote cheating or not, whatever. That's a different situation. I think the problem is that, to be quite honest, the deck playing four Blood Barons and Underworld Connections is already notorious. You know, four Thoughtseize, four Blood Baron, four Underworld Connections.
It's a deck.
I'm just saying, like, for the blue-white control opponent, like, I feel like, you know, saying, like, oh, well, he made all these mistakes. Well, at the end of the day, he's probably favoring the match anyways. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And while the long game, you know, may favor Jensen, you know what I mean? Thoughtseize goes a long way to... Yo,
slow that down.
So,
right.
I mean, I thought it was frustrating to be like, where they felt like, oh man, these punts, you know, Huey should obviously be winning this. And maybe he should, just based on the principle of him being a better player. But we said this before, like, if Magic was all about the best player always winning,
Huey Jensen may not win tournaments.
Well, I mean, if it's always about the best player winning, then this guy who is in top, who wins this probably shouldn't be in the top eight, because he's probably not
the top eight player in the room.
I mean, right. I mean, it's just how it is. That's how tournaments go, and you have to deal with that. You know, I'm sure all of the, you know, being sort of facetious, you know, like, I'm sure all of them have made perfect plays at all times in their career to get where they're at. Okay, oh, and yeah. Hoping you can sense the dripping, you know, vindication I'm getting here, like, yay! You know what I mean?
Right.
You're a perfect player. You made the you didn't. You messed up somewhere, even if you don't think you did, even if you won a game. So I just feel like get off the player's back, because I feel like that could be any random guy. And if Wizards is trying to craft a narrative, and again, we'll get into this a little bit later, but if Wizards is trying to craft a narrative for this guy, that it's pretty messed up. Their pros, that they give a lot of money just to show up to these events, mm-hmm. right, to be the face of the game, is like, well, this guy's trash. You know, it's like, yo, maybe you could let the guy who's like, yeah, yo, cool, good job, you won this GP. Like, yo, didn't win the biggest GP. Maybe didn't have all the stiffest competition in the world.
You won a GP.
But you won a GP.
Right.
You also, and you beat Willie Jensen doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I kind of think, like, the, you know, the black-white, you know, devotion deck, if you will, for lack of a better name, I don't know how much of a known quantity it is. I think people will probably still just want to remain with their typical black-white lists and maybe rely on things like Lifebane Zombie to deal with the Blood Barons, things like that. I think the real kind of breakout thing is we'll take a look at you know, the Azorius control list that we have in this GP, and we'll also take a look at, you know, the Star City Games Oakland results. We do see that just blue white control is coming back in style. So we have Seth Manfield, Jensen,
Eric Centauri. Is the other one in the top eight, correct?
So we have three showing up in the top eight. And then we have Joe Lawsett, notable Miracles legacy player, taking down the Standard Open in Oakland with UI control, blue-white control as well.
You also have Charles Lancaster in the top 16 with the Azorius Devotion build, but still, I mean, still blue-white control, essentially.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. And then... We have Ty Wu in the top 16 of Star City Games with another blue-white control list. So, not a lot of Esper. Do we have any Esper in the top 16 of the GP?
Looking, I thought we did. Maybe I'm wrong here, though.
I know that a lot of them are still having the extra Scrylands, the blue-black Scrylands.
Right.
Just for the Scry.
No, I don't think I see a traditional Esper list. Nope.
So, we obviously know that typically better players show up in the GP due to buys. So start even like the UA, the blue white, saying UA.
I will say this: we unfortunately, so the event that we went to this week in the Classic, the lists aren't up.
Right.
So unfortunately, like, the link is there, but Star City doesn't post the list. But there was a ton of Esper in Columbus this last week.
There definitely was.
So the deck, blue white may be the new hotness, but
right. Well, you know what? There was a lot of blue white though too. Because remember, I had a couple of
there was a couple of blue whites for sure. But I will definitely say Rich was on blue white. One of our friends was playing that deck. Audible to it with 10 minutes before registration was over.
Hey, Mike, do you have a deck I can borrow? I really want two cards. Jordan, do you have two cards?
Yeah. but definitely, I mean, so. You know, take it with a grain of salt. Esper still be around, but Blue White's definitely here for now. It's making its presence known.
Yeah.
I would do want to say, as far as, you know, any of these lists, Jensen's, I think, is... I think if you look at all these lists next to each other,
mm-hmm.
Jensen is the one, like, you know, player beware, so to speak. Jensen is a true master, okay? He's playing without any Aetherlings.
That's true.
And one Elspeth.
Yeah.
So his true win conditions are an Elspeth, two Mutavault, his Jace's, oh wait, and what card? Elixir of Immortality.
Right.
And he is trying to, he's literally trying to the game where he's like, I'm going to deal with your threats, okay? And then I'm going to just win the game when you're out of stuff to do. And I like playing control. I enjoyed playing Esper and Bant and all these other things. I played it with Drownyard, where you were playing, you know, some amount of Elixirs to combat Drownyards. This list would be terrifying to me. I feel like it would take me a long time to play a list like this where I didn't feel like I was really, really, like, full of tension. Because I'd like, oh, God, if I mess up anything, I actually can't win the game. Like, yeah. I don't have a way to do it.
And plus, you need friends that'll get you food because all your matches are going to time.
Yeah, my friends didn't do that, by the way.
You chose to play Esper.
The only way that I could eat on Saturday was my opponent not showing up for a round, so I had 40 minutes.
Well, awesome. We knew that was going to happen, though, so that's why we...
Oh, did you? Oh, well, you could have let me in on the secret. I would have showed up late from food and just taken the match win. No, there was actually a thread on Reddit today that I... Or, I'm sorry, yesterday, that discussed the difference between blue, white, and Esper, and it's a pretty good discussion. The big ploy is consistency with blue, white.
Sure.
Celestial Flare is a good card.
I think it's Last Breath has really been the thing that a lot of them have focused on, but even Jensen doesn't have that.
Which he has it in the sideboard.
He's incorrect, yeah. So, like, if you're going to play it in the sideboard, you might as well play Esper.
Right.
Unless
you're Jensen.
And I think play skill makes up a lot for deck choice. Like, I don't think just because Jensen came in second makes blue-white better. You lose Thoughtseize, which is arguably the best card in Standard. You lose Hero's Downfall. Well, the two people not playing Thoughtseize just looking at me like, eh.
Thoughtseize trades for the best cards in Standard? Does that count?
Does that effectively make it one of the best cards in Praxis?
I mean, it's still dependent based.
It's a narrow statement, obviously.
Yeah. Do you board Thoughtseize out?
Sometimes.
Then not the best card ever. I'd go with Island still.
I play those.
Island's a pretty solid choice.
But, I mean, you lose Hero's Downfall, you lose Blood Baron of Viscopa, which, don't listen to Michael Jacobs, the card is playable.
It's more than playable.
It's one of the best cards.
I definitely had an Esper opponent who played all four against me on Saturday.
And an Esper opponent that played four?
All in the same game. I killed two of them. I was like, all right, feeling pretty good about this, and then, like, dropped two of them on the same turn. And I was just like, well, that's all four. Well, all right.
Oh, he played four.
Yeah, in the main.
He didn't beat other decks.
I played Esper three times on Saturday, and all of them had Blood Barons in the main, and I was more than one.
Yeah. I played against a lot of Blood Barons, too, when I played Esper.
It is definitely around. So those Mizzium Mortars looking real good.
Yeah, that's another reason. But, I mean, like, you lose Hero's Downfall, which is pretty big. You lose the Rando Ashiok Nightmare Weaver.
That hasn't been a thing.
No, some people still do play it.
They do. They do.
I think it's narrow, and I don't think it's a good card, but... You know, like, our analysis about Planeswalker is accurate from the early set of Morgan saying, what does it do?
Well, the problem is that the rest of the format didn't. Like before, when you had Drown Your decks as an actual thing, like, the other decks in the format, the cards were powerful, but they were ultimately fairly slow. So you could play, like, a Drown Yard, but the other thing was Drown Yard didn't cost you a card.
Right.
But, like, now, like, there's not enough, you know, slower decks to make, I think, Ashiok even worth it, and it's not... even look at, like, you know, the blue-white decks, much more we're playing Memory Depths on the board, because ultimately it's still more bang for your buck.
Excuse me. Yeah, I debated between blue-white and Esper for those weekends, too, because, you know, I still have all cards for both, but I just think you concede way too much to permanence when you don't play Esper. Like, outside of his Fortitude Seers and Supreme, like, how does Huey beat Mono Black? After four Dynasty Seers. You need all four of those plus kill spells in that matchup.
Be a good question to ask him, because he obviously did. That's the scary thing here, is he obviously did.
Yeah. Right. Now, there's the thing, if you're getting to play more counter spells, you know, you are getting to play, like, Ratchet Bombs, things like that. So, like, the Ratchet Bomb set to 3 against them is insane if you can play that before you play your D-Sphere.
Hmm.
That's pretty nuts. But I don't know, like, when I play that deck, I feel like, oh, you resolved a spell. Shit. You know,
that's why I said, like, I think, you know, the other lists play an Aetherling as an escape valve, like you can just, like, sometimes you can just race if you have to,
yeah.
You know, multiple Elspeths so you can play a defensive Elspeth, because, I mean, I'd be terrified in Jensen's list to play a defensive Elspeth, because it's your only Elspeth, so if it gets dead, you know, if it gets
you make three, and then he's just like,
if it gets dead.
Oh, God, Elspeth got dead.
You make threes, and then hits it with an elf.
I definitely would say, like, if you want to play blue-white, I would entertain more of, like, the Sifka-style list that a couple of the others are playing, because Jensen's list is, I don't know, I think it's too scary for mortal men.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and there is the possibility, like, Huey Jensen's a Hall of Famer, I'm not going to mean this in the way it's going to sound, but sometimes you just run good, and you hit the right matchups.
Fair. That's fair.
You know, and, like, I don't see how when you're playing, like, half of the good cards in Esper that it's better, but
I mean,
consistency goes a long way.
Is a big deal, and... I mean, you are playing a much more linear game plan, at least with this deck, than you, like, your curve is definite, you know what I mean? Like you want to hit your land, and then you want to play, you know, you want to cycle an Azorius Charm, you want to cast a Dissolve on your turn, you want to give Divination up the next few turns, and you just want to have a million mana, and then you just get to do whatever you want.
Right. That's fair. Yeah,
whereas the Esper deck, it's like, well, in some games I'm going to kill this, and in this game I might have Thoughtseize, this game I feel like,
sure.
You know, you definitely gain a lot of, like, you know, your linear plan, hands look a lot more traditional, like a lot of four ofs in this deck.
A lot more keepable, yeah. No, sure, and that's a good point. You know, Elliot Morgan, another local player who plays Esper, is just like, yeah, sometimes I feel like hands you just can't keep, but you can't mull.
Yeah.
You know, the old can't mull, can't win scenario. And the hands develop, obviously, but a card that I played this week and that I was really happy with was Quicken. I cut Zori Charms entirely, just as a test, like, for the PTQ season. That's going to stay. Because it feels really good when your opponent has red-white up after his main phase one, because he played, you know, a dude. Because whatever. And then he attacks, and you say no blocks, and he double strikes a guy with Boros Charm, and you Quicken Supreme Verdict, look him in the eye and ask him if he has a response. It's really, really good as he uses the old Boros Charm to just scoop up his dudes.
To be fair, we're just going to play the Morgan here and make Morgan just not talk.
Okay.
Couldn't you just Azorius Charm that guy and get almost more value out of it?
Well, not against another guy on board. Right?
What?
He's saying he has multiple guys.
Yeah, he has
no, I understand that.
Because of the white-red aggro opponent.
No, I get that.
But like, just
what I'm saying is, like, he's already the guy at the top, and then he's down a card, and you know his draw for the next turn. Like, it depends where you're at in the game, but I'm saying, like definitely Verdict in there is sweet. Yeah. But it's not like Azorius Charm's like you're still getting a full free card out of him. So you're just like, okay. Sure.
Well, and you're cantripping too.
Yeah.
So you're Azorius Charming plus drawing a card
that's what I'm saying. I feel like, you know, in that exact scenario, Azorius Charm's still okay.
No, sure.
It's definitely better against Brave the Elements. I will give you that.
Yeah.
Where it's like Brave the Elements, like you're afraid of Azorius Charm because they're going to blow you out with that. But Supreme Verdict, you're just like, well, I don't care if you're Brave the Elements, because protection from death doesn't work.
Yes.
And plus, if your red-white aggro opponent is Borisink Charm, one of his creatures, he's not a very good player.
Well, no, yeah.
he's not doing it right.
No, it was for lethal, so that
he's doesn't matter. Still he's still not doing it right.
The whole point of playing that card in that matchup is so you don't get wrecked.
Or at the very least, he just domes you for 4.
Yeah, it just goes to your face.
Yeah, I guess it's true. Because even if you double struck a Darien Skyjack with a Johnny counter, it's still just the same to do 4.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
Yes.
He was not very good.
I was in the 0-2 bracket.
You basically just jerked off into his face when you Quickened Supreme Verdict.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
Wow. You're like, okay. You like LeBron'd him? Like,
yeah. Boom! Now, like, so I was thinking about the use of Azorius Charm and how it's been for me this entire format. So I was thinking, how many times have I drawn a card versus put a dude on top of the library versus lifelink? I almost, out of 100 times, I've drawn a card 98 of them.
Of course you have.
Right. And then the times that I put a dude on top of the library, it's not even that really that much.
I mean, that sort of surprises me, but okay.
It just hasn't came up. I've put white red aggro enough that it would be relevant, but most of the time it's like, oh, well, I have this Supreme Verdict, I'll just draw a card. You know, because I'm just going to set up the 3-for-1 or whatever.
Right.
I
feel like, you know, and again, I haven't, I'll be very honest, I said I loved Azorius Charm in the last format, so it could be my residual memories there.
But it was very good in the last
format. Well, Azorius Charm just sets up, it's just such a tempo play. When you're putting a really, really, you know, if they have anything, like you said, if they do end up braving the elements, or if they try to borrow a charm, or like madcap skills, or you know, even Boonsatter during an attack, you know what I mean? Like, the tempo that you would gain about, but like, knowing what their draw is, knowing you're not afraid of it, getting to do whatever you want for such a few turns.
Against a 1-1 champion of Parrish. Or against an 8-8 champion of Parrish.
Well, yeah. No, that's not what I'm saying. I mean, like, I using it even as a tempo play to just buy you, you know, it's like, you know, hey, I get to take 2 turns without that creature even, like, looking me in the eye again, you know what I mean? So,
sure. And then that was the thing Elliot and I discussed, was that it was a nuts card last format. And you see all these lists that every player talks about, they're just like, oh, I just hate it, it's a cantrip. But they play it anyway.
Right.
So we were just saying, well...
No, I mean...
Right, I think you get the sense of
like,
it, right?
Looking at it from the perspective of, like against Mono Blue, I suppose, like, if they have a Thassa on board already, like, if they just don't want to draw the crappy card again, they just won't.
Yeah.
And you're looking at against like Mono Black, you're never going to want to put something like a
Grey Merchant,
or like even like a, you know, even getting a Pack Rat token probably wouldn't feel good. You just want the verdict anyway. So I can see it. I could.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like a little kid, like he doesn't want to let go of like the teddy bear. But like, but Azorius Charm,
that's the way I felt about it for the longest time. And Elliot goes, just try it. And the first time you just like figure you're going to cantrip with the Quicken at the end of turn and you draw a divination is insane. Like that got to happen. I was like, yeah, I cantrip. And he was like, yeah, whatever. I was like, well, divination. He was just like, reality. It was like, you don't know me, buddy.
Well, to be fair though, the plays that you're describing, you know, the Quicken was so good for you, I hate to tell you, Blue White's a much better Quicken deck than your Esper deck is.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So,
because when you have Quicken, the Tension Sphere, you're like, fuck this card.
Well, you know? What I'm saying is, like, they're playing, he's playing all four Divinations, and all four, you know, obviously playing both playing
yeah,
four decks.
No, sure.
But, I mean, I think definitely the Quicken gets better in these lists than it does even in Esper. So,
oh, no,
if
I mean,
you like that interaction, plus you get to play Zorius Charm, too. It's the best of both worlds.
I mean, but you don't get to play Thoughtseize or Heroes Down 4 Dupe later, or Boros.
Boros Elite, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Like, you play them if I want.
Well, I play 4 Boros Elite and 2 Mutavault and 4 Blood Baron, so when I have the Mutavault and the Blood Baron and the Boros Elite, trigger!
Get some memory tap.
So, that's a card that I tried that I really liked. There was a couple of other changes that I made just to see. I played a Doomblade instead of an Ultimate Price in the main. I'm indifferent. I was in the mono.
I am too.
Yeah, I was in the mono.
That's one of the most boring things you said about your deck so far.
Well, no, I think
I tried art number 364 of Swamp.
But I think it matters because if you're in the mono matchup all day, like the Doomblade felt really bad. But when you're in that mono, if I was in the mono blue matchup, the Doomblade would have felt really good. And I think that's just the meta. Like it's 50-50.
I think I'd want Doomblade just because Mutavaults are everywhere. And right. It's really mm-hmm. awkward to like hold your ultimate price and be like, well, can't kill this Mutavault.
Right.
So
the worst card I tried out was Warp Physique. William Moore, you are incorrect. That card is garbage. Like it's he goes, well, you only play one because it's a bad top deck. And I was like, yeah, if it's not in your opening hand, are you going to ship your hand? Like I don't want to draw that any time past like my second draw step. And it's like, oh, 5 cards in hand. Oh, that Desecration Demon.
I mean, I guess if you get to like Revelation for 7, and then you're like, well, I drew the Physique in it. Well, before I go to discard, I guess I'll kill a guy.
Plus 14, make 14 your guy. Yeah, like it felt really, really bad. I put it in the sideboard, and that's where Elliot said I was incorrect. But like I
think it's if you're trying to like just draw one of your like many removal outs, and that's the one you draw when you're low on cards like, right. Early in the game, board. You're just like, oh well, huh?
I'll help you kill me faster.
Yeah. Is that a phantasmal image? No, it doesn't die on the target.
All right. So, I had it in the sideboard, and I literally brought that in the first game against Mono, or what did I play? I brought it in my first game against Mono Black. I played like round 3, and I was like, that card was terrible. I took it out and just played 14 cards sideboard pretty much just the day. I decided it never again. And I was like, I might as well fucking rip this up if it weren't for deck checks. So that was what I did. I know that's kind of long and boring, but
that's all
right. I was.
So, I mean, we can kind of, like, continue on the list here. So, Blue-White, I think, is definitely something we'll continue to look at.
Yeah.
The winning list, I mean, I think, as I'm, like, thinking about this list, I mean, it's essentially, comparing it to Mono Black, right? You're essentially trading Blood Barons for, you know, Grey Merchants for Blood Barons.
Sure.
And if you're trying to win that matchup, definitely the Blood Baron probably does win that matchup. You lose, I mean, Grey Merchant has some raw power, especially with Whip, but I think, like, you still get a lot of upside out of this list. So, and like, I don't know, like, just like the Golgari list they've been pushing for so long, one of the things that's felt so bad about that green-black, like, mono-black splash green is the Guildgate. Like,
yeah.
It's so bad. But in this one, you get to play Temple instead. And I will say this, we talked a lot about the Spreadlands at the beginning of the format, but I'm saying right now, like, the difference between playing those two cards, I mean, it's so massive, okay? Rarity aside, because I still disagree with that. But, I mean, there's a huge difference. You get to play your on-color Scryland. That, I mean, you're playing Underworld Connections. Like, if you have an Underworld Connections to play, and you draw for your turn, and then you get to scry and see what the next thing is, and then shit. I mean, you're talking about, like, seeing so many cards on your turn compared to your opponent at that point in the game.
Yeah.
Like,
it's definitely impressive playing against Mono Black and them just being like, or playing with Black White or whatever. Because that was my last round opponent in the Columbus Open, was a similar list to this, probably pretty much. And just, he's just like, Scryland, Scry this, Underworld Connections, draw, just like, oh, it's so many insane things. I'm playing Big Tears Boros, and we don't have a way to draw cards unless it's Chandra, and then we could draw cards in quotation marks. We just have to use them that turn.
You know what he's quoting there, right?
And it's just like, well, I wish I could do that sometimes. Just wish I could draw all these cards and look at all these things, and it's pretty insane to see, most certainly. But I don't know if it's something that's just going to stick around. I just think the Mono Black just has so much raw power, and it's still pretty inexpensive. So.
If Blue-White remains a thing, Blood Baron is going to be the more... I mean, so think about the matchup between, like, okay, so Esper, you know, is what it is. But, you know, think about if you're taking Blue-White and your choice. So, like, I think Blue-White's going to be 20% of the meta, okay, for example. So your choice is Mono Black or Orzhov, right? Mm-hmm. Aren't you taking the list of Blood Barons and Sin Collectors?
Probably.
I mean, I think that's where you're at right now. I'm not saying it's automatically a better list, because chaining Grey Merchants is a way... I mean, if you watched Owen Turtwell at all, you know, a couple weeks ago, like, against certain decks where it's just like even against, like, the Mono Blue deck, where it's like, well, looks like he's just going to be dead to the beat. Oh, Grey Merchant for... Oh, and another... Well, that game ended quick, and it's like,
right,
wait, exactly. What? What just happened? Like,
he was explosive. He just drained his opponent.
And Blood Baron isn't going to do that.
No. Okay? Right.
Like, when Blood Baron's looking at a Thassa, and Thassa's like, well, all these are unblockable, so, you know, here's the bird, Blood Baron, and you're dead. Yeah, there's definitely upsides to it. So if you think, it just depends, I guess, which deck you think is going to going to be around more.
Right, and now, I think Mono Blue had a stronger showing at the Star City Games.
It did. It still made a few appearances in the Top 16 at the GP, so,
yeah.
and it was still there in force. As was Mono Black. I mean, Mono Black's in the top 8 and a couple times in the top 16. So it's not like either of these decks are gone. You also have, so talking about the Big Tears Boros, we have these sweet...
Yeah, did you see the burn list?
The burn list. I still don't think burn is where we want to be in a format full of Blood Barons.
And Grey Merchants.
Sphinx Revelations. Azorius Charms.
I saw this listed. It brought...
But he top 8'd.
Yeah, it brought a little warmness to my heart. I'm like, this looks very similar.
Against the Esper opponent who played all 4 Blood Barons. Against that opponent at one point during one of our games, I did win the match. It was close. I did get the match. During one of our games, I was able to chump or to double block a Blood Baron, and already had a he had like Dimir charmed a Chandra's Phoenix earlier in the game, and I had scryed, like I had set up a scry from 2 turns ago to have a Chandra on top, so I knew what I was going into. It was like untap for turn, play Chandra the Pyromancer or Pyromaster. He's like, yeah, and I'm like +1 shoot you, and he's like, sure. I'm like, trigger 3 Phoenixes, and he's just like, yeah, like, it's like, now, see, this were a point of contention. I know we're talking about the GP stuff still, but I did a small write-up about our about the Big Tears deck, the Boros deck. I didn't name this deck, so I don't feel egotistical in saying that, but...
It's like a ball of care in the affordable
care. I think when you look at card advantage, you have to, when you're looking at colors that can't draw cards, I'm sorry, it was
funny. Hysterical! What? Well, no!
Let's all pause and laugh at Jordan's joke.
Hysterical! What? I'm so sad.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
Okay, say your part again.
So I'm not trying to be egotistical in calling it Big Tears Boros.
It's like Obama in the Affordable Care Act. He calls it Obamacare.
<You guys. laughs> Moving on.
Thank you. Anyway.
anyways, the thing is, in colors like that, you just have to have cards that equal, like, more than one card.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Like, so you have Young Pyromancer, which is, giving you value off of your spells. You have, anytime an opponent casts a removal spell on a Chandra's Phoenix that isn't Last Breath, you're like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, and that's
it's
kinda...
coming back later.
Yeah.
If Reckoner gets the trigger, like, ever, then you essentially have gotten a Searing Spear and your creature.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think, and then of course, like, Planeswalkers obviously are worth more than one card. So I think you have to just remember from that perspective. In a deck like this, the Phoenixes and the Young Pyromancers here go a long way to making your burn spells feel a lot better. And one card I really want to talk about in particular is Magma Jet. It is not seeing enough play. Magma Jet is,
gosh.
If you're playing red in this format that isn't like the most hyper-aggressive thing in the world where you want shocks or just mana consideration, learn the unsung art of casting Magma Jet. Because, dear lord, scrying 2 in red at any point in the game, it's magical. It really is magical.
It is awesome because you'll have hands where you'll just... It'll kind of be like a shaky hand with Magma Jet. You'll just be like, this is fine.
You see hands where it's like, oh, 2 lands, Young Pyromancer, or Magma Jet? I don't even care what the other 3 cards are. Right?
Yeah,
we are
matter.
Here. And this deck definitely gets to play that. You also get to play 4 Warleader's Helix. So even in the aggro game, like, if they have, like, just creatures,
mm-hmm.
like, Warleader's Helix, if you have a hand with Warleader's Helix, it actually lets you, because... Like, in other burn decks, the issue is, like, when do you go to the face, when do you kill a creature, because, your card values go down a ton when you have to kill a creature.
Right.
But, like, things like Warleader's Helix, really let you be like, you know what, I can ignore this creature this turn and just go to your face and get such a huge tempo swing out
of
it. And I really think, like, something like Chandra Pyromancer, she's been on a bit of a downswing, but we were talking about this weekend, the White Weenie deck's been still pretty popular, Savannah Lion's not a deck. And they can't beat a Chandra.
No.
And then if you look at the rest of the top 8, you have Channel Fireball's new baby, which is the terribly, terribly named, mostly white
aggro.
Mostly white Orzhov aggro.
Yeah.
Which is still, Boros Elite, Daring Skyjack, Dryad Militant, Imposing Sovereign, soldier of the Pantheon.
You get Zach's like, Necromancer.
Chandra's
they probably lost it.
They have spears and stuff as well, but you're still looking at a bunch of, you know, ones, and you're, you know, and Chandra's just like chomping at the bit. She's like, yeah.
Player X ones.
And pew, 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 pew.
And it's fine. Like, Chandra felt really nice. It feels really nice to play like a permanent. You're like, yeah, deal with this because you have to. And that's kind of the advantage with our deck. This list seems interesting. It does have like notes from the big tiers Boros list, but it is essentially just a burn deck.
It's a burn deck. I mean, Skullcrack is a good thing. I mean, Skullcrack goes a long way. What's really sweet about Skullcrack, though, is the interaction you get with, like, Master Waves.
And Brave the Elements.
Yeah. Like, so you can, like, set up... So especially when you have if you happen to have a bunch of tokens from your own Pyromancer, mm-hmm. so you're like, oh, you know, your mono blue opponent just swings with their Master Waves and all their tokens, you know, like, whatever, and you're just like, oh, cool, block this. Skullcrack. And you're like... Oh, and they're like, okay, yeah, damage can't be prevented. Your Master Waves dies.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Or, oh, you played Brave the Elements, that's sweet. Your creatures still die. You know what I mean? And it's a nifty little interaction.
So, we talked earlier today about Mindsparker out of the board, which is the potentiality. Well, you're going to hear me out. This list is reality. White slash Boros Charm is reality. Mono Blue is reality. Blue White is becoming a reality. And it's only three mana, so that card's like great against all those decks.
When I first was tuning the list, the original sideboard, the plan was I had four Mindsparkers on the board, and because Reckoners are terrible against control, they're just bad.
Right. Doesn't do anything.
It's three for three. That's all it is. You would one-to-one swap them out for Mindsparkers. In a straight blue-white matchup, they were awesome.
Right.
Getting a shock out of, you know, Supreme Verdict, it was just another card that allowed you to not have to overextend because they had to deal with it first. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's the kind of thing where if they dealt with that card with a detention sphere over like your Phoenix, you're having a great day. The other interesting thing about Mindsparker now is it does dodge Last Breath, which is interesting.
That is very interesting.
That being said, it's hard to fit into a board because it's a very narrow card. You can't bring it against Esper. I don't think it's good enough against Esper because it just, you know, it eats a Doomblade so easily it doesn't matter. You know, for no value. It's like, oh cool. Yeah, that would be cute if I was Aurea Charmed, but instead I'm just gonna
End your turn and devour flesh. Right.
And then it's like, well, all right, so I think it's a little too narrow because like I don't think you want one or two in the board, obviously. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you want it to be like almost a straight swap.
That's exactly what it is. Like you either want all. I think you want four or none. So I think I would need to see another week of blue-white dominance before I'd really consider running it again. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a deck like this, you know, this burn deck in the top eight, you know, adapting with that card because that card, I mean, definitely adds. You know, it's game, that deck's game plan is a little bit different than ours.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with that. So, you don't think that's good against, with the first strike being good against those white splash, is that the Necromancer decks? Or the,
I mean, no, I see what you're saying with that, but I mean, I'd rather just have Reckoner.
Is it creature or player, or is it player that you can shoot the shock to?
It's player.
Against Invader.
Yeah. No, for sure, like, if it was creature, I mean, yeah, but in that case, you just want the Reckoner anyways. The Reckoner
and again, it's only instant or sorcery, so, like, they need to be playing spells, but those just...
It's instant or sorcery. It's not white.
It's like creature. Oh, my gosh. It was what, a blue spell? Okay, that card gets a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, cool. Cast Quicken. Cast Quicken into your, you know, like you shock yourself there, and then, like, you draw, like, Detention Sphere, and it's like, yeah, shock yourself there, too, and then it's like...
You
know,
like that, don't you, dirty boy.
Yeah, it's all right, that's cool. Yeah, you played an Elspeth? Yeah, you know, shock you. It'd be like...
Right.
But, no, it's only...
A good card advantage.
Instead of Sorcerer. Yeah, they couldn't make it that broken, but... I mean, it's definitely something... one last thing I want to talk about in this mono, mostly red Boros Burn deck. Oh, gosh. It's called Boros Burn. That's all you have to do.
The problem is Kibler.
Yeah.
Because he wrote a whole article about terrible deck names, and Wizards can't not listen to Kibler.
That's true.
And now, well,
that's all we have.
We can't call it mono, we can't give it a cute name, so it's mostly this color. You know what? Screw you, Wizards.
Anyway, I just want to say a 3 of Spark Trooper. In the sideboard,
okay.
For the
I don't know if that sideboard is correct because there's only 11 cards.
I don't even care. It's probably not. But I mean, okay. At the very least, hopefully three of them were Spark Troopers. That's all I care about because I love it. Ball Lightning Helix.
I hate you. Why don't they just call it that instead?
I have no idea.
I want Ball Lightning Helix.
Ball Lightning Helix.
Can we get an altar that has that?
Just cross out Spark Trooper Ball Lightning Helix.
That's awesome.
Love it. I died to that card in Magic Online. It really sucked. He's like top deck Balling Helix. So I was like, oh, that's...
Take six.
I can't stop that. I lose.
A good deck.
I'm at four. That is trample. Not good. Love that card. We should play that card. I'm just kidding. We should play that card. We already talked a little bit about the StarC Games Oakland. It was won by Joe Lawson, Blue White Control again. Red White Devotion showing up again. I think that list is coming thing. Dave Nolan actually played that list, a Red White Devotion list at the classic that we had.
He did not do very well.
He did do very well, but he did say that when the deck worked, it was insane.
We've playtested a few games, and there's games where he's like monstrousing a Stormbreath Dragon on turn 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And then there's games where you killed his first guy, and he has like double Nykthos in hand, and you're like, well, this is...
Yeah, and
this is just terrible.
One thing that he was definitely discussing with me is that a really awkward card in the game is Burning Tree Emissary, because you can't cast anything off of it.
I mean, you can cast Mizzou Mortars, and that's actually it.
It's like back in the Nia Bloodstained.
No, you can't activate Nykthos, which is a plague. But I mean, even that's not a play that's going to happen on turn 2, it's going to happen on turn 3.
Right, so like on turn 2, if that's your only thing, you're just like, Burning Tree Emissary. Go,
yeah.
But he's like, he also said that, you know, you can play it on turn 3 and you could use it to cast the hammer, which is kind of interesting, or activate Nykthos later on. It is awkward. I really wish that you could do more with it like you can with the red-green decks. Green-red decks. So that's definitely interesting.
I will say this list is probably, at least for a week or two, going to be in dangerous space, because if the Orzhov deck was really popular, the Chain of Fireball deck, and I saw a couple people like streaming it online last night, and because of that, you're going to see a rise in Anger of the Gods. And this deck itself plays Anger of the Gods, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'd be more worried about those effects like that coming out of even the main deck, in the next few weeks.
I definitely think that,
you might see America Control come dancing around again, because why not? It never seems to die. It doesn't do well, but it doesn't die.
That's not a good deck.
It's not a good deck, but it doesn't die.
There are two way better control decks that are currently in standard right now.
And yet people won't play them.
I know. You can play blue-white and not even have to buy
People extra. Will ask you your opinion on the deck, and you'll explain to them why it's probably not as good, and they will not care. Though they ask you,
they will ignore opinion. You. That is correct.
I do hate when they play the Counterflux against me, though. And
that card's fine. Counterflux is sweet against when you're trying to win an Aetheling War, but I don't think that deck's... we shouldn't even talk about
it. It feels really good when you're like, yeah, Sings of Relation for 3, and they're like, oh, Counterflux. And you're like, yes!
Yes, thank you. And then we have Mono Blue Devotion showing up more in the Star City Games Oakland Open, which is expected. We have White Red Aggro coming back, so that's... Aggro seems kind of weird. I think we're kind of in that transition where it's like mid-range / devotion decks and control decks, and Aggro's kind of lost. I think the most popular have been like the resilient green-black list or the resilient white-red list, just due to the protection spells that the white-red list has, and then the green-black list has a bunch of regenerator creatures that are hard to kill.
I definitely think you see like the aggro, though aggro is a light-based, because, I mean, just, mono-red has such a hard time with the amount of blue matchup,
mm-hmm.
that, like, Brave the Elements is the thing that can make that matchup fair. Yeah. Where, like you can aggro, you can be the aggressor early in the game, and then once they've stabilized a little bit, you can just, like, charge your Buster Cannon and...
Right.
And break on through.
Yeah.
That's right. Buster Cannon.
You get your upgrade.
Yeah, of course. Upgrade complete. Yeah.
Perfect.
Do.
You can't tell two of the three of us are Mega Man fans in this podcast.
And one person's like scratching his armpit and like looking at his phone. He's like, are we podcasting right now?
Mega Man, that was a game I had once.
Sure.
Wow. You sound like you're like 90. Yeah, the kids used to play video games. What a waste of time!
I'm the baby on the podcast.
It's kind of interesting where Iroh goes. I don't know if the green black list or the will kind of stick around, but I'm pretty confident that probably white red will stick around at least.
I think so. People always like to play this thing.
Or white black.
White wing is the thing. Spear is really good. It's a Brave the Element. Whatever Brave the Elements is going to be a standard. White Weed is going to be a deck. It's just going to happen.
Well, it's cool because I thought about this over the weekend. Whoever named the Legacy deck than Taxes was so right. Like, it's just like there's White Weenie. There's always White Weenie. Death Taxes and White Weenie.
It's 100% true.
What I do think is interesting is how good Imposing Sovereign has been in these lists, though.
Oh, that card is insane against the Blood Baron of Muscoba.
I mean, it gives just that extra turn against a card like that is insane. But the thing I saw last night, so watching some streaming, is like against the Mono Black decks. So the Mono Black deck in these matchups, you know, wants to go on the Pack Rat plant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what they want to do is if they are trying to play defense, they want to be able to attack and then like leave a Pack Rat, you know, leave their new Pack Rat back on defense. And Imposing Sovereign makes it really hard. Yeah. So it makes the racing a lot easier for the Mono White deck, even though the Pack Rat deck is going to make more Pack Rats. Allowing you to get to that point where, again, it's like, I don't care if you have five Pack Rats, I can attack for lethal. Here's a Brave the Elements, you go die.
Right.
You know what I mean? So right. You know, they can't just be like, attack like this and make a Pack Rat and just sit back and block with their big Pack Rat. Now it's tapped. And, you know,
it's awkward, right?
I watched it happen a couple times where it makes, you know, if you can put them off their curve for a turn or two, just like any of these other decks, you can really get in. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, that's just kind of their form of disruption. I mean, that's what they have to go for.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that for a second? If you're playing Mono Black and you play turn 2 Back Rat and do anything else but make a turn 3 Back Rat, you've just done it incorrect.
Right.
We talked about the article, right? Yeah. The article was sweet. I play against 3 Mono Black players who, like, played turn 2 Back Rat. Turn 3 did something else, and then, like, went on the Pack Rat plan. I was like, oh, you would have had another Pack Rat. I'm like, yeah, but I got to, like, draw a card.
Oh, to be fair,
honorable connections,
if you can.
But
you
it wasn't honorable connections.
Okay, it was not honorable connections.
It was
a discrimination demon. Discrimination demon. That's why the deck's mono black.
Yeah. Hey, racist. I'm going to apologize to all racists.
Wait, no, we don't.
No.
Actually, I'd like to apologize to the people that Jordan just offended by apologizing to racists.
Yeah, we do want to apologize to those people.
You'll find a full list of everyone we apologize to on hireinstuff.com.
We apologize. You won't find that list.
But if anyone wants to make that list, go ahead.
Yeah. No, like, they would make something other than a Pack Rat.
Right.
And I didn't understand, like, why do you want to get blown out by Sphinx or by Supreme Rook? So you play Desecration Demon? You're still just one for, like, you're still just playing in the Supreme Verdict
right
here.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the Mono Black opponent, if I just have Supreme Verdict, you're just dead anyway. So, like, what's your game? Like, just make a Pack Rat.
Yeah, like, any time that you give me another opportunity to kill your Pack Rat without you being able to make another Pack Rat, I will thank you.
Like,
I will personally shake your hand.
You gave
me an opportunity to draw this Magma Jet, and I'm going to kill your Pack Rat
from all the value.
And it's going to blow my mind.
like you said at the tournament, you were like, don't make a Pack Rat, don't make a Pack Rat. Oh, you didn't make a Pack Rat, thank God. Draw a card. Not the answer, go. Don't make a Pack Rat, don't make a Pack Rat. Thank God I didn't make a Pack Rat.
But it's like, with you playing Esper, at least you could, like, deal with multiple packs.
Oh, yeah, you have the D3.
There were times that I was playing in the open where it was just like, he was just like, turn 2 Pack Rat, and I'm like, well.
I told you you were making a mistake keeping hands loose and turn. Like, because I saw, like, oh, yeah, I beat Mono Black. It wasn't even, you know, difficult. And you were like, we got to talk about that matchup. But I'm like, and then he's like, it's like, I just can't deal with Pack Rats. So I'm like, you're keeping shitty hands. Like, that's what you're doing. The deck has 16 removal spells. You can't kill a Pack Rat, you're keeping.
Yes. Which I definitely can see now, but during the tournament...
I can see now.
He has 16 turn 2 spells and kill that turn 2 Pack Rat.
Right? Keeps, he like, looks at an opener, it's like 4 Stormbreath Dragons, 3 Mountains, and he's like, well, yeah, how do I lose?
Swing for 8 on turn 4, on turn 7.
They were hands with spells that I could cast and lands to cast them, but they didn't have multiple removal spells. But with the Mono Blacklist, you can't just be like, well, I'm going to keep these 2 removal spells... this X random card and then like 3 lands or
no, sometimes they're going to Thoughtseize it and play the Pack Rat in turn 2 and
sometimes they're not even on that Pack Rat plan and you're playing something completely different.
How often are you getting Thoughtseize on mono turn 1? Like,
I mean, it's fairly consistent against mono black.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, outside of a GP, I'm sorry, I stood up, I need to stand. Outside of a GP, how often... players, even when they make Pack Rats, aren't good at making Pack Rats. They do it at weird times. They discard the wrong cards. They make bad attacks and blocks. I mean...
Yeah, FYI, if you're playing Pack Rat, you don't even win 3 lands. You just pitch lands.
It's not even just... It's just like, God, like, you don't play around onboard tricks half the time. Like, I've seen so many people, like, attacking the, like, Boros Reckoners and just get blown up by, like, a singular removal spell, lose all of their Pack Rats, and all I've done is, like, okay, you lost all your Pack Rats, you have no hand left, and I traded 2 cards. Good game. You know what awesome. I mean? It's like, so...
Perfect.
And again, we try to assume, like, even our testing, we try to assume that people are going to make the right play with that. But consistently, Mono Black, you know, I'll be very honest. I lost to Mono Black in the Invitational, and that was Will Craddock, who's a pretty well-known player.
Yeah.
He played a very good match. Beyond that, I don't think I played against a very good Mono Black player. And I don't mean that wrong enough. I've insulted anybody that I have played, and I'm being, like, arrogant and a jerk. I'm sorry. But none of the people that I've played with that deck have struck me as, like, well, okay, this is hard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, so Mono Black is cheap, right, to build?
Relatively.
I mean, the mana base is easy.
Right.
Minus the Mutavolts.
It's a pretty cheap deck. The Erebos is an expensive Underworld Connection.
Like, the most expensive cards you're going to be buying are going to be Thoughtseize and Mutavolt. But the best thing about those cards is that they are cards that are played in
other tournaments. So, I mean, like, we often say, like, Nia Blitz newer players play because it's cheap. Or, like, you know, your Mono Whites, the cards in it are cheap. So a lot of newer players just play this deck, or a lot of people that are just getting into competitive play.
Right.
That's not to say it's bad. I mean, it's really fun to go Graveyards and Masters until you're dead.
Right.
I mean, that's a fun thing to do. So I can see a lot of that. Like, I played Mono Black all weekend, and it was the best. Like, all three of those Underworld Connections. So, D-Sphere, go. Do you have any responses to the activated ability? No? Okay.
Sweet. Well, we'll go ahead. We'll move forward a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about probably just our bit of experience that we had with Star City Games Columbus. Do you guys want to say any more things about that, really? I mean, we all finished relatively high. Both Mike and Jordan moneyed.
Barely, bitches.
Jordan did not deserve the money, and I'm not lying. Morgan was crossing his fingers, hoping Jordan did do money.
To be fair enough. Well, Jordan drew the last round with his opponent and a bunch of other teams.
It wasn't
did
safe.
As well.
It wasn't it was, safe draw.
Jordan was like 40 something going into last round.
43rd
going into last round. Drew, I was 32nd going into last round.
What?
Yeah.
And woo! Didn't draw. So
I lost because I didn't draw because I didn't think it was safe to draw. And
had either myself or Morgan actually just decided to draw, Jordan, who took 32nd, doesn't draw in the money.
Yeah, right. So I'm X and 2, right? Me and my opponent decide that.
To be fair, I will say this. Jordan started 0-2.
Yeah.
And finished in 8-6, or 5-2-1.
Yeah.
So impressive run, to say the least.
Fair. Yeah. Rounds 3 and 4 were my favorite because they were garbage. fun people. Like, you just, like, I had a great time playing with them. If you watch, I'll give them business cards. Oh, man. Hey, you guys were fun to play against.
Good job.
But, I'm X and 2 going into the final round of round 8, which was a very quick tournament, by the way. Big shout out to that staff, the guy from Indianapolis was the head judge. And my opponent decided
Indiana.
He's just kind of a very heavy German accent, and you ask him where he's from, he's like, oh, Indiana. I mean, I met before that, but whatever.
Indiana, Germany.
Yeah. And me and my opponent decide that X2 is a lock for top 32, and X3, some will squeeze in.
None did, though.
No. Well, yeah. So we decide that if that's the case, X2 and 1 is a lock. So it is correct to draw. One table 2 in the higher tables draws, and one table behind us draws. And we're like, well, we're just going to draw. And, like, as soon as I tell Mike gives me this weird look of, like, no, you messed up. And I ended up losing the fun match that me and this guy played anyway. So I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to beat me up in the parking lot if he doesn't make top 32. And we ended up, I ended up coming 32nd. He comes in 31st. And he gives me a hug. He must have been elated. And, like, sure.
But the table next to you that drew, that was a table up, those are 2 and 1s who did not.
Right. The guys below us that drew, like, we were table 21. Table 25, I think, drew. They didn't make
they did
it.
Not.
Okay. Yeah. They were 34, 35.
Yeah, they would have just added Morgan.
Yeah. So
it was Morgan's last round. And they
but hey, mistakes were made.
Mistakes were made. I love it.
So I went X3, which I'm still fine with. Like I said, I don't play as much as Mike or Jordan, really. And I don't play as well as Mike or Jordan.
Well, you know what, though? Like,
I haven't played in a major event since the 50K as well. I mean,
I went to the streets.
Give him a break.
No, I'm not giving him a break. You get better.
I was going to say, like, X and 2, like, if you win that last round, you probably top 16.
I don't know if I top 16.
He was behind me.
Yeah, I definitely top 32, obviously, but right. I don't think I top 16.
I mean, I won my last round to go to 6-2 and went from 28th to 23rd.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a breaker thing, though. I mean, the guy that you and I both lost to.
Jordan, had a terrible day.
Yeah, after he beat Jordan and myself consecutively, he proceeds to lose his next three rounds.
We would have played round 2.
Yeah, we would have.
That would have been terrible.
So, but he beats us. That guy wins his first round. He was a nice guy.
Very pleasant. Yeah.
Wins his first round. Beats Jordan round two, myself round three, in like a ridiculously long, like crazy match.
He was playing Esper, right?
He was. Yeah, he was the one who I drew all my assembles, but nothing else to go with him. And I was like, it was a really weird. Like I had a Burning Earth to take care of Jace's, and he cast all four Revelations, and it was a ridiculous game. Lost to a Blood Baron at the end, so no, it is what it is. I looked at the top card after the end of the game, and it was the Mortars. I was like, ah!
Why did you look?
He wins his next round, right?
So, no, he won the first round, because it was round three that we played, because I was
2-0. Oh, okay, so he went 3-0-3.
And then he loses his next three, and killed both of our breakers, honestly, so.
Yeah, my opponent win percentage was off 48%.
Yeah, it's pretty
so,
rough.
So, which, I mean, when you go 0-2, you're going to get that.
No, you are.
But, sure. So it was pretty fun to, like, 0-2. I thought I was going to quit. Again, and then
I'm giving you credit. It was a really good turnaround. So I mean, yeah, obviously, 100%. Obviously, you're and I understand if you're listening and Jordan gave you a card and you played in the 0-2 bracket. I apologize for what I'm saying, but when you start off 0-2, you are playing sort of the dregs of the tournament. And by dregs, I don't mean like bad people, but I mean the decks that have not been doing well, possibly not the best decks in the room. You know, I will say this: there were a ton of new players. I mean,
there were a lot of new players,
across all spectrums of, where Jordan starts off, 0-2, where I start off 2-0. My first round, I played against a new kid playing Mono Red, and he was having a good time, and nervous, he was shaking a little bit. But he's a nice guy. Like, I thought it was really cool that despite the weather we had and everything else, that, a lot of new players, it was a good round.
I played a brand new, it's my first competitive relevant from the kitchen table, green-white tokens, dude. That was fun.
I will say, by far, That event was run so well. The whole group there it was great.
We were out at 7 o'clock. It was 10:30 to 7 o'clock for an 8-round event.
And congrats to FFG Pro, Ray Perez. It was funny, as I was talking to him before the tournament started, about one Andrew Morrow, Pro Tour competitor, about how he was going to come in a half an hour before. Because he's like, hey, have you seen Morrow? And I'm like, no, not yet. And don't worry, he'll come in a half hour before asking for a standard deck. Guess what? PSA for Morrow. Find a deck before you come to a tournament. It doesn't work the reverse.
Well, then he loses and he's sad.
The Morgan kicked him out of the tournament. So
it happens.
So sometimes. you beat a Hall or a Hall of Famer.
Not yet.
No, you beat a Pro Tour competitor, so you're as good as a Pro Tour competitor. There you go.
That brings
you want me to look to spirits. I mean, I'm lying.
Yeah. So that's correct. That brings my Pro Tour competition. It Star City Games, Star City Game events, 2-1.
Hey, look at that. Look at you.
Andrew
Shroud. Better than the average pro.
Andrew Shroud. Andrew Shroud, I gotta redeem myself against you at some point in time.
No, I didn't address your observation, but I don't know if you guys agree with the, after spending most of the day in Streets Pro and Empire Cards, at like the top tables of the event for pretty much the whole day, I had a much more pleasant time doing that than at the bottom table 100s, table 100s plus on Saturday. I felt like, I saw a chart on Reddit that I thought was interesting. The better the players you play, the more enjoyable the games are, because people aren't dicks. And I thought that was kind of noticeable. Like my round three opponent was just a straight dick. He wasn't very good, but he was a straight dick. Like, he was like, well, I tapped three mana, and I like played attention. He was like, well, hold on there. It's like, well, I mean, like, you're allowed to respond to a spell, Zach. Like, when you, I threw my pool in response. Like, you know, the game doesn't work that way. But, like, so, like, you know, and when you play at the top tables, like, you like, miss a trigger, and they'll point it out a lot of the times. Because nobody wants to win that way. You know, whereas, like, you know, people...
Well, the guy we played, he was playing around Burning Earth that third game, and he was trying to tap, to not die. And, he didn't tap double color a couple times. We had to go, like, I'd be like, oh, wait, hold on for this. And that's just, I mean, you have a lot of mana, you got to try and pay attention to it, both players do. But you are right, like, sometimes you end up playing those players who are like, you're playing Esper, and they're like, oh, well, real original, you must have gone on the internet and just took, it's like, well, okay.
There's no way to let me play too, bro.
Well, why did you spend $30 to come here then? What were you expecting to play
like
against?
The overflow from the Magic Online player base
Star City. Star City does a good job of like the whole if I top 16 then I'll get my. I mean, I was even saying that I want the top 16 just to get the deck list out there. Why not, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I'll show all those net deckers. You know what I mean? My awesome brew. that's not how it works.
No. Right. And, like, you have obviously spent a lot of time on your deck and a lot of energy on it, and you have been on it for a very long time to tune it to where it is.
Right, and then I kill all the net deckers who I play against.
Right, and clearly.
Don't look at me.
I didn't need to admit to that. Not everyone can necessarily not necessarily do that. I can't do that. I'm not a very good deck builder or anything like that.
I know, that's why I play my deck.
It's exactly. Cool. Hey, I enjoy it. I'm
apparently not a very good deck player too. What the hell? We don't get a hard time.
Hey, I mean, in all honesty,
I'm just kidding. I think you did. I was really happy with.
I mean, in all honesty, the with the amount of time that I've had with Mike's deck and the amount of games I've actually been able to play with it.
Oh, it's been great for you,
hasn't it? It has actually been very good to learn. It varies a lot of triggers, and I think it's making me a better player because it's making me slow down and really make sure that I am doing the things that the deck wants me to do, because the deck will work with you as long as you know what you're doing. All right. And sometimes I don't know what I'm
doing. We're going to repeat after me. Tap two.
Tap two.
Cast Magma Jet trigger.
Yeah, cast Magma Jet trigger. Okay. I don't think that I missed any of my Power Mance triggers.
No, but I was watching you, and Jordan was saying too, your ordering is incorrect. Where you're correct. Just like, I was like, I missed one or two triggers, and I caught it immediately. I was just like, ugh. And I was like, oh, way to go me. But like, you still like you got to get that handle of being like, as soon as you declare a target, then you're triggering. Right. Can't let the spell resolve, because like if you touch those cards for scrying or damage is like resolved,
yeah,
you've missed it.
Right. Even if you like look at him, right? Like, I mean, if you're like Magma Jet, and he's like, yeah.
If the pause is accentuated, yeah. So yeah. you've got to like be like. So you just get used to saying like this trigger. And I will not lie, I have definitely seen Magma Jet trigger a couple times without even Power Mancer in play, because you're like, oh wait, never mind.
Yeah,
when you're triggering, scry. Like, yeah, it's not
as good yet. It doesn't feel as good. That's unfortunate, but I'm pretty happy with the deck. Mike, have you? I know that we talked a little bit about some sideboard changes that you're looking at.
I think you know, depending on how blue white continues going here, the Burning Earths, as good as they are against Esper, like the whole format's just so much monocolor.
Yeah,
like I brought in Burning Earth against an non-Esper opponent one time, and it was only for a game I was on a play. It was a blue white red. It was blue red black. Wait, white red black. It was technically a white devotion deck. Mm-hmm. But it was running like Rakdos Returns and stuff.
Yeah,
so
some splash. Yeah.
So I had some stuff with it. It was an interesting deck, and I brought it on the play against that deck. I never cast it and brought it out, obviously, on the draw for the third game, because you know it's a little too slow. Like, you know, right. If they get a Blood Baron out before you cast it, well then
it's always a problem.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
So I think it's time for those to go away. And I think we talked about, you know, the third Assemble. There was some stuff on Twitter about how the Assemble, you know, Assembles. I like it against Esper more than I like against blue white, only because Esper normally, you know, a lot of Esper lists don't always have four detention spheres. There was a list from GP a few weeks ago that had one in the main, and they also
GP mono play.
But because the deck has other ways to win and other cards to play, including like Blood Barons and that sort of thing. Like they're not.
It's not a straight control.
Well, it's not just that. It's not so much the detention spheres. They throw away their Jaces a lot easier than the blue white deck does. Like they don't mind letting a Jace die. But blue white will protect a Jace to the hilt, because that's essentially a win condition for them. So it makes your Assembles a lot more awkward. So we talk about bringing Elspeth in, because it gives you a little more immediate value than the Assemble does if it's going to get the Tension Sphere in that matchup. It gives you an out to the Jace, you know, with her ultimate. But it also is a little bit better. Like, we wanted another card to possibly bring in against the big monster matchups. You know, where the minus three is
really relevant. Yeah, and especially people were going overboard a Blood Baron, then having another Elspeth,
it's so I think we're gonna take out the Assemble on the board for another Elspeth.
Yeah, I don't want to buy another Elspeth, but
neither do I. But I think it's necessary.
I do have another one that I'm not using, so you guys can like fight over or something.
Dibs.
Oh, where's the knife?
Hey, guess what? That's on record. All right. Dibs right here. I did it.
Morgan's gonna be like, oh yeah,
okay, edit that shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Morgan's gonna be like, oh sorry guys, the file was corrupted.
I'm just gonna edit it out and put my voice in
it. It's gonna be like, you know, the Raylar movies on TNT. Yeah. Dude, Morgan totally have it. It's gonna be like,
it would be like super clear and crisp, but it'd just be going, dibs. There, I already have it in here, so I'll just cut it out and put it in.
Perfect. Listen, why? Perfect.
No. I also wanted to apologize to anyone else that is, you know, I know Mike wrote the article, so people might be picking it up. Sorry, guys, you might have to buy another Elspeth. We'll test it out.
I highly doubt that many people are doing that, but hey, you know.
You never know.
And if you do, like, don't be discouraged if this list doesn't win your first Evan that you play with. Because
I mean,
like,
I want a bunch more.
Okay, well. First FNM back playing this list, I went 4-1, so not too bad.
I just mean that, like, to literally, like, because me and you both watch my play.
The deck's hard to play. The deck's hard to play, I think.
Very, very, very.
Right. So, like, you, like, don't just pick it up and go, how do I win?
I don't mean that from, like, an arrogant standpoint. I mean, like you have to make a decision early in games, like, what direction you're going to try, like, what your game plan's going to be, what cards you've seen so far. Right. And your scries become really, really important, and your game plan, you know, has to shift with it. So you definitely have to, you know... Yeah, again, like, for as far as a brew deck, it's definitely, you know, a deck like where I've been like, yeah, you should try this deck, but at the same time, like, minimal testing, it's rough. I mean, it's
certainly.
I know the deck's intimate crevices and
I knew you were going to say crevices for some odd reason.
You want me to say nooks and crannies?
No, I just knew you were going to say crevices. I just knew you were.
It's like was Thomas's Bagels.
Yeah.
Nooks and crannies.
But yeah, I definitely still like the list, and I like the changes we're really making for it. I mean, if blue white becomes more of a thing, then don't do that again. Stop it. Anyway, yeah, blue white comes a thing. I mean, I'd like to see, like, Mindsparker come in. Maybe
the problem with Mindsparker is
you see Mindsparker go.
Well, anyways, I went 6-2. I was actually honestly like I was talking to my wife, like, you know, afterwards. I was like. Like, I don't even know how I went 6-2. I had it was definitely a rough day. Like, a lot of mana issues. Had to play around a lot of floods. I mean, if you guys watched some of the games, like, I had to play some games. Like, there was a game against an Esper opponent. I went 1-3 or 1-2 against Esper, which is, I mean, before that I had only had one constructed loss to Esper since the start City Invitational. Like, and that was in the 50K.
I literally never beat you.
Yeah, I mean, like it is a, I mean, good, like, matchup, and I had some really rough draws, and, you know. Play against some tough matches.
And it could just be like Blood Baron.
Blood Baron was definitely a couple of things I lost to, but I mean, I had a match, the one match against Esper I did win, where, like, it came down to, like, me having to, like play this really, really tight game with, like, a Stormbreath Dragon, like, with the way the Montress was going off, and just, like, I had to use that to ride a few cards off the top of my library until, like, I was able to get them with it that way, but, like, I don't know, I had to play a lot tighter than I normally would, which, I mean, it's, not that I play loose that often, but I mean, like, the deck was definitely giving me a lot more lands on Saturday than it would. So I was actually really happy with the 6-2. I was a little upset with the second loss to Esper, which put me out of top 8 contention. But I'll take the money. I'll take the 6-2 on a day where I could have just as easily, like, you know, a couple of my early rounds where it's like, oh, cool, land number 13 in play and, you know, 3 or 4 stride to the bottom. And, well, this is a fun game. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, you know, it's the kind of day where you can sort of tilt out and pull Jordan. And I managed to save it. So it was nice.
I really like how that's pulling a Jordan now. That's awesome.
Yeah, so
congratulations, you've arrived.
Yeah. Can our first merch that we sell be like pulling a Jordan or like
I had a great time. I thought it was a really well run tournament.
It was fun.
I got pizza at the North Market, which is
God, so
such
delicious.
Good value.
I got chocolate covered Oreos too.
Oh, by the way, you have 2/3 of your instep in the North Market, and it's usually me and Morgan.
And this little piggy stayed home.
Yeah.
I'm pointing at Jordan.
Yeah, usually it's Morgan and I, but he was like cheating road order this week.
I was really
cheating.
Hungry.
I'm sorry, are we not allowed to be friends? Like, Morgan and I not allowed to be friends?
We have a mandate to World Market every
day. Literally a mandate. Not like
so, like
a
Obama making you get healthcare, calling it Obamacare? Mandate.
That wasn't a mandate. That was a political moniker established by Fox News. Get owned! Learn your current events, sucker!
All right, moving on.
I was just trying to call back to your terrible joke. Notice how it wasn't funny the second time either.
Get owned! the best part, I'm not trying to change the subject, but the best part of the SCG Classic in Columbus, there was a two-headed side event that was going on, and the judge was announcing pairings for that event and goes, two-headed giants. And, like, I just imagine...
It was like two-headed giant players. Just,
yeah. Imagine Rorkthar being going like, "Hur?" I don't know why two Rorkthar sounds like Scooby-Doo.
It's all right. It happens.
I'm going to say, I thought it sounded more like Tim Allen from Home Improvement. It's actually... Okay, let's not do all. We should stop doing all our impressions.
Our friend. Yeah. So. It was just hysterical. And then, you know, like, if you know me, I have my favorite, I am a mighty planeswalker bit. And, like, the head judge at the start of the day goes, attention, planeswalkers. And Dave Nolan was just dying. he yells across the hall, across the player meeting, goes, Jordan, hi from the Shard of John. Just
dying. Oh, yeah, it was definitely a good time.
I was the only disappointing thing about that event was the lack of a good joke about water. Yeah. You know, you look forward to a good, like, you know, keeping drinks off the table joke. And it was bad.
He had the perfect setup because he was talking about Nexus, Shrine to Nyx. And he's talking about soda, and he's like, we don't want your soda to spill in your Nyxos Shrine of Nyx. Or it'll be, and he has a long pause, and he says, ruined.
He said damaged.
He doesn't want it to be damaged. What he should have said is he doesn't want it to become stick, though, Shrine to Stick, which would have been amazing.
But, oh. Is that where you would have taken it?
Huh?
Is that where you would have taken it?
That's where I would have gone.
Where would you have gone?
I don't know where I would have gone. I was so disappointed by the damage comment. I was just like, I don't know.
Like, anything I could have said was better. I was going to be like, yeah, so you're Nyxos, throwing the Nyx. If you put a drink on the table, we'll Nyx you. I thought that's even better than...
Okay, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I take it back. I'm appreciating the damage joke now.
I have grown fond for it. You always work it into the name of the card. That's what I've always seen.
That is what they normally do, yes. This is true.
So that's why I thought stick those. But anyway, if anyone wants to send me an altar of stick throws trying to stick, then I will accept it because it's still
those trying to stick. Yeah, they're gonna send you a branch in the mail. I got a rock.
So we'll go ahead. We'll move on. We are running a little bit long in the tooth. So do you guys want to keep going the question? We have a pretty good question of the week that I want.
I think we should do the question of the week.
Sure, right, sure.
Yeah, remind me what it is.
So we'll have a little bit of a long one. So guys, strap in.
Strap in, Jordan. Not on.
It's my biggest problem as a human.
So we did talk about this a little bit in our GP Dallas Fort Worth discussion, and we. Kind of were alluded to it. There was a question that Aaron Forsythe kind of put out on Twitter. The specific question is, I have it written down here, is if you were watching Magic matches to be entertained, how would you like Magic players to conduct themselves? And that's kind of the general gist of the question.
What is entertaining?
What is entertaining? To specifically Magic players.
Clown swing Magic. I want to see juggling and shuffling at the same time.
Right. I mean... So, we thought that this was a great question, and I'm sure a lot of podcasts will probably bring this up, but we hope that we'll be the first, because this is going to go up hopefully tomorrow, which will be Wednesday. So
tomorrow will be Tuesday.
I know a lot of...
It's Monday.
Oh, is it Monday?
It's definitely Monday.
I have no idea what's happening. Where are we?
Today is Monday.
Oh, though. We're in my apartment. Oh,
well, it's Tuesday now, because it's past midnight.
Oh, shit, then I'm right.
I hate you.
Well, then it actually went up today, so you're still just incorrect.
Fair enough, then we'll even be quicker.
Yeah. Turn it about the same day here, folks.
Can we talk about the question? Because, like,
I would like to go about
it. Oh, fair enough. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty easy to please, I'm not going to lie. Magic coverage is hard for... I think it's hard for us to discuss because we know the game. So, what you have to do is you kind of have to ask this... I almost want to say you have to ask this not... in putting yourself in the mindset that you don't know what Magic is. And I think that would be the hardest thing to answer is how do you make Magic coverage entertaining for someone who is either new to the game or doesn't know the game and is interested
in it? I think you're taking the question too broadly. We've sort of talked about like how to try and take Magic coverage better... But the question at the heart is is there a way for the players to make it more entertaining?
Okay.
The player sitting in the match isn't able to make it more entertaining.
I think that might be just like my sort of general disagreement with the question, because I don't know if they're there to make it entertaining.
Correct. I think it's a bad question.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. Is it more entertaining for you? What was more entertaining for you? Okay.
Okay.
Finals in the top eight. Okay, let's go this last Pro Tour, okay? The two friends playing against each other. Storyline, okay? Them playing, or Day 9?
Oh, MC Day 9.
Really?
I think Day 9 is one of the most entertaining casters in the history of internet casting.
But he's a comedy of errors when he's playing Magic. And
you're thinking Magic. I thought you were comparing
I'm sorry.
The entity that is Day 9.
Let me be more specific.
Sure.
Day 9 with a Pro Tour invite, which happened on camera.
Where he got the, yeah, you know, no, MVP top eight finals. Right, okay, sure,
For me, what I really enjoy, especially in those top eight matches, I enjoy the tension. Not an anger between the players, not a tension between the players, but the tension of the match. You know, there's some great, you know, there's the classic picture of Conley Woods just sort of like looking over his hand. He's got that look in his eye, you know, and I don't know if that might have been GP or Orlando from last year. I'm not sure what the picture I'm thinking of was from. Mm-hmm. But like he's like, you know, he is so locked in and his opponent's locked in and they're playing great magic off the top of their, you know, of their decks. And it's, I don't know, there's something to me about that where that makes it compelling. You know, the tension, the suspense makes it compelling. Not, you know, I'm not looking for, you know, Ruben Bresler. I'm not looking for the newsening, you know, mm-hmm. during a match. You know what I mean? I want to see two confident players in a tense match that is a close game. And if those players, you know, it may not be their job to do that because it's the commentator's job to carry the dialogue. They're, you know, we don't have our players mic'd up, probably for good reason. You know, probably the same reason we don't have a lot of NFL players mic'd up, because let's face it, kids couldn't watch. but at the same time, like, you know, what I think they could do is really work on storylines better. You know what I mean? Even if it's like, you know, even if it's like they're doing it like, you know, 2 or 3 minutes before a match starts, you're recording a little video of like who these people are, this and that. And the major pros can already have those made up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can already have them in the cycle and just be like, you know, League of Legends I know does this, where they have like team introductions and player introductions and like, you know, this is what you're doing, you know. Hey, what are you playing for in this tournament? You know, if it's a pro who's trying to hit platinum or is trying to hit gold or is trying to requalify for the Pro Tour. I mean, let's look at, you know, Brad Nelson and Todd Anderson the last few months who've been trying to get back on the Pro Tour. I mean, that's a compelling storyline for Wizards. You know what I mean? But if you don't know these people, right, and you're just watching them show up on coverage all day, like Todd Anderson, when he took Mono Black through that, you know, that GP, he was on camera a number of times. Why doesn't the player at home know the storyline behind him competing? And then there's that tension.
You know, if he doesn't win this match to make top eight, he's going to walk away not uncued for the Pro Tour, you know, again, and it's going to be disappointing for him.
Yeah,
right?
So you're
and
just...
So now you're adding to the tension of the game with the tension of the storyline behind it, and now Todd Anderson doesn't have to be entertaining. He just has to play the quality magic that he's already playing on camera.
True. So you're just basically fleshing out the people that we see all the time.
That's what, and I know it's hard because, you know, the other idea is that any, you know, it's, you know, anybody could show up on camera. But again, is it really that hard? If you had a system set up, a set amount of questions you're asking, you can craft the narrative in 10 questions.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Magic players you have a reason of playing.
And
the
enough
game.
Of us are dramatic enough that if you asked us to try and make it compelling, they could. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I push my car in here, and like, if I don't win money, I don't get to eat.
Right.
Like, you just say the $30 you gotta take a gas.
But I mean,
he may not get to eat.
But I definitely can see now that you've opened my eyes. I definitely can kind of see where you're coming from with this question and what it's truly asking.
And I could be wrong. I mean, Foresight isn't asking that, but when I think how could it be more entertaining in my mind,
that's what I picture.
The thing is like, I think this question is. I agree with Morgan that it's a bad question because the question has already been answered by other people who have done this. They've taken their game that you don't necessarily know and made it huge. League of Legends, Dota, I mean, and then from my past, StarCraft. They've taken these things that were just games and made them spectator sports. And right. They made them these things that you need to know nothing about League of Legends to know that when the dude kills the other dude, that's good for the dude that did the killing. And in StarCraft, oh, his Marines died, his are alive, that guy's winning. And in Magic, that guy has more life points. I mean, that's not always reflective, obviously. But like, you can still generally just watch the game mm-hmm. and sort of have an idea of going on. A little harder in Magic. But the players just need to play good competitive Magic. What do the NFL players need to do to make the NFL more competitive? They don't just go play football. Like, I don't watch the Cleveland Browns because of... Well, I don't know why I watch Cleveland Browns. But like, I don't watch the NFL games because of the players' shenanigans. I watch it to see them play good football. And like, likewise, with Magic, I don't watch Todd Anderson because I think he's a nice guy. That sure as hell isn't it. I watch him because he's good at Magic. And, like, I watch Brian Kibler because he's good at Magic. It is commentator heavy. I agree with that. That, like, so get a day 9 in the booth to talk about Magic. Because that guy can make, like, paint dry sound awesome. Like, you know, get somebody that can, like you said, build a story. Interview people before they go on camera.
And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you and I get a feature match. Hey, real quick, what's your goals today? Oh, I really want to just, like, cash. That's really all I care about. Or in your case, oh, I need two more open points to qualify for the Invitational. Yeah. And then you just have a fielder talking about, like, Mike wins this match. He's in this position to get two more open points to qualify for the Invitational.
Right.
Like, it's easy.
And especially, I mean, I think, honestly, it gets me easier for Star City because they already, you know, handpick their camera matches, you know, and not that Wizards doesn't, but because GPs are a little bit more difficult, especially in the early rounds, you don't have pros around.
So, I mean, that's why they don't start GP coverage until round four.
Oh, yeah, you can cherry pick, and you can have the pro ones already set up, because the other thing is, like, in football, yeah, you're watching football because the football players are going to play the game they want, but also, like, when you hear things like, let's look at, if you play basketball, if you watch basketball last night, we're going to have the Lakers playing. But it's Kobe's first game back since his Achilles injury. Mm-hmm. You know, most players with an Achilles injury take this long to come back. But Kobe, you know what I mean? That doesn't matter how Kobe's playing. Kobe can't hear the commentators talking about that. But that's a storyline that takes the tension that's on the court and ups it. And that's what I want to see. You take the tension that's in a game, especially those high-stake games, those matches for the top eight, those day two matches, those top eight matches, those finals matches, and you add just a little bit more to it. Just a tiny little bit more. I mean, the thing with that is, you know, we've made a lot of complaints. Community has in general about commentators not being very good. Okay, that hasn't really gotten better. You know, at least from the Wizards' standpoint. But the commentators wouldn't have to do anything if they're just handed these stories. You know, if they get to watch the interview too. You know what I mean? That's like candy for them. Like, you're going
to
help
something
us.
Something that kind of comes to my mind that actually does, I think, a pretty good job of it, and it with a. Basically, you know, card game is have you watched, like, the World Series of Poker or something like that? I think they do a really good job of this. And they have new faces on there a lot, and they have old faces on there a lot.
Also, they're pre-recorded.
Yeah.
And they can set their... In poker, you can move tables a little bit easier.
But it's the same kind of concept. And, like, you can still have pre-recorded bits of people who are consistently good, just so you have those in reserve. And then... If there are new faces that are kind of, you know, streaking out, you have 2 days, right? You know? So you can, you know, take, you know, end a day one, providing that it ends, you know, before midnight. and you'll be able to talk to these people who have, you know, these undefeated lists and, like, craft a story around them or you know, work. You know, Joaquin the Plains does this a lot, too, with what he does.
Well, that's a narrative.
Excellent example.
And he is very good at constructing that. So why can't we bring that into coverage and have these, you know, compelling things?
I mean, just like, look at the pro standpoint. Like, it's like, what's one of the biggest jokes of the Pro Tour? Like, oh, you got paired against Craig Wesco. I bet he's playing White Weenie. Well, then why aren't you being like, Craig Wesco's been known for the last decade playing these, and then it showed the list that he's played. Right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Cedric Phillips, you may know him from playing Kithkit. Like, what's that? Oh, well, here's a deck he's known for. This is the guy, you know, Kimbo's a Dragon Master because of this list. You know, because like, of the things he did here.
You can take away he's currently playing and how it relates to the list that made them popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, like, it's...
I mean, Kimbo plays the decks that he plays, and they're creature-based mid-range decks.
In my opinion, it's easy. So, like, in StarCraft, it's easier because you have pools of players.
It's easy to you, but it would take time from Wizards, and they really haven't shown the desire.
Right, right. And that's the frustrating thing. I mean, like, so I like, keep referencing StarCraft. It might be missed on a lot of people. They have pool play. And even if a player is 0-3 in his pool, like, they can still put him on there and just go, like, so you could take a, you know, Patrick Chapin that's X-2 or even X-3 dead to day 2, and I would still watch because if Patrick Chapin is playing Magic. You know, like, so... We have our bad boys of Magic. Use this Alex Burcini thing as a great casting tool. You know, like, we have our bad boys of StarCraft, who even if he's 0-3 in his pool, you still put him up there just in case he says something ridiculous or bad manner somehow. Like, it doesn't matter how he is. You build, like you said, the tension. This game is completely irrelevant, and no one should watch this because there's other streams and other games. But this guy's playing, and this guy matters. You know, and, like, his game might not matter, but he matters for us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, like Star City dropped the ball when they didn't put Alex on camera at all that whole day. And until the finals and when they had to.
I don't think they dropped the ball.
Well, I think they missed an opportunity.
I think they dropped the ball letting him play in the event. But that's just...
So dropping the ball, dropping the ball is not a fair term. Like, maybe missing a potential opportunity. When you had this narrative, oh, man, Alex Burcini, his first SCG opened back. He is X and O. This guy kind of scummed his last time. And he's the bad guy. But that's a narrative you can build. That's a tension thing you can be. Oh, man, he wins next time. He can double draw into top eight. And then he's back in the top eight again. And then you follow his top eight career. And holy cow. You know what I mean? So I'm with you completely that it's narrative. It's tension building is a good way you describe it. I think that's
And
that.
Anybody who's not a name is inherently the underdog.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, that is the easiest storyline to craft in the first place. Yeah. Like, if you're playing against a known name and you've gone through all their list of accolades, well, then you've already stacked it up. It's David versus Goliath every time, and that's always compelling.
Yeah.
Okay? Especially if you've now made a narrative about it, and the underdog wins. Because now their win feels that much more exciting.
Yeah, like right. the guy that went, like, X2, or lost his first round in the GP, or first two rounds in the GP, and just won out.
Oh, Vegas.
To win the whole thing. Yeah, like we know that story, but, right. like, that's such a compelling story, it wouldn't capture anyone.
Or was it? It's like, Kakeno from Dallas.
Yeah.
He didn't make it to round six. So he got three buys and then loses rounds five and six and day two. Well, he's obviously a known player, but I mean, like, that's the kind of thing where it's like if he's on camera on the next day, like, that should be a little thing, you know, and I'm sure the commentators did say that about him, but like, that should be popping up. There should be little blurbs. There should be, you know what I mean? The other thing they could possibly do, and I don't want to make this sound like, you know, like pop-up video or something like that, is, you know, they do already incorporate their Twitter feed onto the main website. You know what I mean? I think they could probably do a little more interaction based off that. Like, if certain questions come up consistently, you know, if players at home are asking questions about a player, and then the commentators know a little bit more information about the players because of this, there could be that interaction.
Yeah, I mean, you have community people for a reason. Right. Use them.
I think that has to be done tactfully.
Oh, for
in my
sure.
opinion, the
for
worst
sure.
thing ever is when, like, oh, man, looks like we got some mentions. Hey, Alex, and they're, like, literally reading it for the first time off their phone.
Right, but I mean, like, that's why you have someone that monitors that feed. That's why you have a community person.
Oh, sure,
sure. Like, hey, here's
this is a good
question.
One, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It just has to be done correctly for me to be mind that. Like, if Star City just started going, like,
Especially with the Magic community being so vocal on Twitter, like, you'll have people that people know. You'll have voices in the community that aren't necessarily pro players. You'll have, you know, the Marcells of the world and, like, the people that are like us, that podcast, that do have a following, which we don't. But you'll have those people
I follow you.
I follow you guys. So
we'll follow each other.
We walk in a circle.
But you'll have, you know, the people that, with a voice that, you know, will be known, and then that'll help them craft the story,
sure.
the narrative.
For sure.
And, you know, I think that obviously it's kind of compelling because, you know, saying what can players do to make interesting.
My idea doesn't even say what the players can do.
No,
beyond
because
playing
I don't
high
the
quality
game.
Magic.
Because yeah, I honestly don't think the players could do anything. The players should be playing Magic.
Well, they can be receptive to the questions, these hypothetical questions that we're asking.
Right.
So, like, if they're like, hey, do an interview before the game and after the game.
Right. Sure.
But, like, be receptive to that.
Right.
Like, be an interesting personality. Like, you watch the SCG Open Champions video interviews, they're usually not that good.
No.
Like, so why'd you play that card? Well, that card's good because it kills them. You know, like when they interviewed Riley about elves, like, so did you cast Natural Order? And Riley's like, yeah, I cast the Natural Order.
Like, I saw on Twitter they talk about the full opposite part of the spectrum, just go full WWE on it, just be like, yeah, I'm gonna play Patrick Chapin and I'm gonna crush him and I'm gonna break him because I'm the Dragon Master.
Yeah, but no one I don't think anyone would be really receptive to that necessarily.
I'd laugh.
If it was like with the new one headset, I would. Probably
no, but I mean, it. Like you, even in those interviews, you still have room for the the player who doesn't really give like indicative answers. Like, yeah, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm here to do. And just right then you have that sort of like that, you know, that jerk. It's like, man, I don't like this guy. Beat this guy. This guy was a jerk. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
And like again, that itself is compelling.
You
know,
the
commentator
say nothing in your head. You go, that guy just.
Yeah,
he's too good to be here.
Yeah, I hope that guy beats him. And then, like, right there, two players you don't know, don't care about, all of a sudden...
You have a favorite.
You do! You pick
right.
someone. You
and
have a horse
awesome.
In the race.
Yeah. I think post-interviews is really good, even with a loser. Now, granted, like, it's a little tough to get a loser. You're not going to get the best responses sometimes. Like, StarCraft guys would say, you'd have to compensate me to do a losing interview.
Right.
But, like, just be like, hey, so that game went this way. You made this play when you could have made this play. What were your thoughts? Oh, well, you know, X, Y, and Z... That's just more narrative. That's less selling me booster boxes of Theros.
Right.
That's, you know, less commentators going,
we'll get you a game here in about an hour and 45 minutes. Like,
yeah. Or it's just like, you know, even talking to play in band life, we'll walk us through that game, you know, what were your decisions, you know, it, you know, looking back on it, you know, immediately what was, would there be anything that you would change? You know, did you really feel like you had a good grip? I wouldn't say like, oh, well, clearly you could have done this and do that. I think it would be good to get feedback. Like, sure, one of the things that I always enjoy is when people are playing decks that I like to know what their thought processes are and what kind of decision trees that they're making. Because that helps me kind of understand how I should be looking at the cards that I'm playing. Or, you know, even when people are playing decks that I don't want to play, but I know I'm going to be playing against, because I think that is also very useful information. So just getting this information from people, not only in writing, because I know people obviously write articles about these things, but just having an actual discussion with them is a lot easier, and I think it would be a lot easier for, you know, other players to communicate, you know, what they're actually doing during their matches. And I think that'd be interesting. You know, it gets us to know these people a little bit better than just reading their words and actually hearing them speak about something they obviously like doing. And I think that, like I said, the Magic players need to play Magic. And like Jordan said, you know, be receptive to maybe these things that Wizards decides to do. The way you make Magic more entertaining...
I still think it starts with Wizards.
Yeah, the way that you make Magic more entertaining is by making it a story. People love stories. People like to be entertained by, you know, reading, by playing video games, by watching movies. I did say an obvious thing, didn't I?
Tell me a story, Pop. Tell me a story.
But
tell me about the one where you said the obvious thing again.
But if you look at other coverage, where it's, you know, whether it's League of Legends, whether it's Dota, whether it's StarCraft, I feel that they do far better at story crafting.
They do. I mean, they definitely do.
Than Magic does. And that's just, I just think that kind of relates back to the people that actually have running coverage. It's just, they, I don't think they're necessarily compelling personalities. We know how much Mike loves Rich Hagon all the time.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, exactly. So, just get compelling people. I mean, I think that's what Jordan has been focusing on a lot, is like, get a day 9. Where's the day 9 of the Magic community? I don't think it's Marshall Sutcliffe. I enjoy Marshall Sutcliffe, but I don't think that he's...
probably Matt Sperling. Again, I don't like the guy as a commentator, but the guy knows how to elicit responses. Maybe they hire him as the writer.
So the thing that, this is a really fun topic for me. The thing that makes day 9 exciting is that he was the best North American player in his era, okay? And he's freaking insanely interesting to listen to.
So he's a very unique quantity.
Right, right. And that's what makes him good, is that he was really good and he's a better person at talking about the game. So like, you have like an LSV or Brian Kibble, for example, who actually might fit that bill, who are insane at the game and might be better at talking about it. You know? I don't know about LSV. The LSV is still pretty insane.
I mean, I think both of them, but see, that's the thing. I think both of them are still very good, and it kind of comes back to the argument that we've had before, that, you know, when you are, typically when you play things like, when you play sports or something like that, there comes a time where you just can't play anymore, but you can still talk about it. With Magic,
you
could be 80 and play Magic. Let's be fair. You could be very old and still have the mental facility to play, and that's all you need. So it's very hard to find people that are like, yeah, I'll go to the GP and not play.
Well, we talk about that with, like, how we joked about the at your in-step states, how we joke about that when we're like, oh, well, who would commentate? And we're all like, like, none of us are volunteering, you know? Because we'd all just want to be out there playing.
Let's be fair. It'd be me. Let's be fair.
Well, it'd probably be me and you. Right. Like, you could have a two-teamer up there. But then it should be garbage commentary. We want Mike in the booth. Jordan Sandy cast Supreme version against his blue-white opponent. Why? Was he a vapor kid? I don't know. But, like, so yeah, I
agree. It's like
Wizards.
I think it takes time. I think we have to discover that personality. I don't think that person necessarily exists in the Magic community.
I wouldn't be surprised if Day 9 would do it if he didn't have StarCraft.
Sure.
Like, because he does the YouTube video series, Spellslingers.
Yeah, but I haven't necessarily heard very good things about that.
Me neither, but, like, I watch it.
I haven't either. Heard it's complete garbage, but
it's good stuff. But the thing that makes it okay is Day 9. And, like, that makes it a thing that Wizards will still do, is because he, I mean, he's, like, what, 2.4 million Twitter followers? Like, it's just dumb to not have that.
Sure. So, oh, you are really popular with people and you like our product? Please.
No joke. If there were a PTQ on a day and then a day where Day 9 were casting a tournament for Magic, I would skip the PTQ and go watch the tournament. And that's, I mean, like, so that actually should say a lot. Like, if I'm going to skip a Columbus PTQ,
but then
to listen to Day 9 play.
Day 9 has to become as well-versed in the game as an LSV or a Brian Kibler, and I don't know how easy that is.
He doesn't even have to do
how
that.
How easy? It's not possible.
No. Yeah. No, he doesn't necessarily need to do that, right? He can... Because in commentary, there's the guy who's telling what's going on, and there's the kick guy.
But Steven, the Magic community only takes one, like, as we saw in the GB Finals, it only takes one mistake for the community to turn on you, because we're a vicious, terrible community at some point in time.
Don't be dumb. Don't say dumb things.
Yeah.
I mean...
But it's
not that hard to not say dumb things when you're being... Oh, wait, am I being recorded into two?
You are, currently. And as we know from me, it is super easy to say dumb
pretty
things.
Sure, yeah, guys, it's Thursday. Pretty sure in the last cast I said all the Germans, yeah, GB Vienna.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
it's all right.
Yeah. Vienna, Germany. That's
clearly. but it only takes one slip up and the community be like, this guy's an idiot. Even when Day 9 got his special invite, people were already being like, this guy doesn't even... who the fuck is he? Like, he's the StarCraft guy. Who gives a shit?
Which, by the way, if you said that, you're an idiot. Don't talk about my guy that way.
Easy.
I'm just saying. But no.
Down, buddy, down.
But I understand that you have... He has obviously contributed a lot to the StarCraft community. But when someone gets a random invite that...
is worse than you at Magic. Yeah. I feel the same way.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Or at least has not contributed to the community. And... is such a hollow ploy for Wizards just to be like, hey, look, it's Day 9. Come watch Magic, StarCraft players. when it's so like transparent that that's what they're doing, like, it's kind of insulting. So I'm not saying that it maybe could be. I just think that if he were to do it, or someone like him from another community, whether it be from Dota or League of Legends, would come over and be like, I'm going to be the personality of Magic. Like, he would just have to be so well-versed and just, you know... Like, you can't have someone like that do the same thing. I don't think you can have someone like that in the same community so, like, just making mistakes about what's going on, you know? Especially Magic, just because it's 20 years old.
Right.
It has such a history. League of Legends and Dota and StarCraft don't necessarily have that. I mean, StarCraft has somewhat of a history, but...
Big in Korea.
Yeah. I mean, not as much as Magic.
It's true. It's bank sponsored. And,
yeah. You know. So not as much Magic. It's definitely a compelling thing to talk about. It now, I mean, it's kind of interesting that Aaron Forsyth, of all people, is exploring it when he should just be tuning future cards. But no, whatever. I'm just kidding. Aaron Forsyth, you ask all the questions you want. We'll see what comes of it. It could just be like Aaron Forsyth just being like, let's troll a bunch of Magic players. But we'll see what happens. And we'll kind of leave it at that and move into just some housekeeping stuff. So obviously, next week we'll have our 25th episode, so it's kind of a big one. We'll maybe take a look back, do a little, you know, reevaluating and things like that, just kind of a preview of what's to come. And we'll probably, I think we've decided to take off into the new year, and hopefully we'll come back for the new year. We're going to try to see what we can do to get a guest for our first episode. No promises or anything like that, but what?
I thought you said we wanted to try and get 25 in before the end of the year.
Yeah. We'll do next week, and then we're going to take off.
I misheard you. I was like, sorry, everybody.
Yeah, we're going to... We're going to do episode 25 next week, and then...
I'm sorry.
Right. Tweet at us what you'd like to talk about next week. I guess it'd be cool.
Yeah, please do. Obviously, it's pretty monumentous for us. I mean... 25 episodes before the new year, which is pretty good since we just started this this
summer,
year.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we definitely want to celebrate it with you guys, all of our fans and listeners, all three of you out there. Thank you so much. Now, we know there's more than that.
The three of us, like us three and Dave, listen to this every week.
Yeah, we got it. I don't listen to it again. I just edit it. I listen to it then.
Well, Dave doesn't even listen to it. He listens to the shows he was on. You know?
So we'll kind of leave it there. Please go to @yourinstep.com. It's the quickest way to get the newest episode about your Instep.
Jordan and I will be in Tree Throw this weekend.
Yes, for Jam
Trios. Some Team Trios with my wife. So.
Yeah.
Team Tears?
Team Tears. I can go Team Tears. That's fine.
So, yeah, definitely go say hi to them. I won't be there.
Big T, little T, and Big C.
there we go.
Team Big. There we go.
So, definitely come up, say hi to them. I won't be there again. I know, it's sad. Well, you have to find two other people for me to play with, and then I would have to go, and then I can't.
Catherine.
I actually have other plans, unfortunately, but I do wish you guys the best. Hopefully you go ahead and take down one of them big money tournaments up at Streetsboro. Probably should have a good payout.
It's 18 packs per team.
That's not bad.
So it's like, you know, half a box for each team, so
that's pretty good.
Then
we just like get 12 packs
or something up, right?
Yep.
Well, for Yeah. And then, so iRNSF.com, that's where all our Twitter stuff is. It's pretty easy. You know, find us, follow us on there. Give us feedback. Use the comment system on articles, please. Anyone?
Not Morgan's, though, because he doesn't write articles.
I don't write articles. Like, sorry, guys. I'm the voice of At Your Instep.
You pay for this website, and he doesn't use it. I'm
the writer of At Your Instep. Then turn my fucking side of the page into something else. It's not my fault.
You know, it's really hard to actually do that. It's like, hey, delete one third of the website. Give me my $15 back and delete one third of the website.
Hey, I paid for part of the website. I can do nothing with my portion. Thank you very much. And yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to me next week.